Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, Mo, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analyticshour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 79. And you know what else? Happy New Year. This is the first episode of 2018. And you know it's that time of year when we forget all of our acquaintances for someone named Auld Lang Syne, whatever that means. But in the spirit of brotherhood and bonhomie, we want to handle a topic of some indelicacy. It's what do you do when stakeholders just don't get it? Ugh, we barely started this year and I'm already frustrated. Mo, you've been in 2018 longer than any of us. How's the year going for you?
Yeah, the year's going great so far, what with my extra time.
Excellent. And Tim, our other co-host, how are you doing?
I've got to say, as we say down under, I'm a little dusty coming off the new year. So everybody in the U.S. knows what that means. Or they can look up in their Australian to American English translation guide.
That's right. If there's one thing this show does, it sort of brings those two worlds together so nicely. And of course, I'm Michael Hubbard. But we need a guest. Frankly, we need a guest who is way more patient and persuasive than we are. So we turn to the one person. He's the next president of the DAA board, and he's also the head of enterprise analytics and digital intelligence at Vanguard. It's Rusty Raymer. And people often comment on his salt and pepper hair, but today we're mostly interested in the brains underneath them. Welcome to the show, Rusty.
Great. Thank you. Happy New Year. Welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
And by people often comment, as I understand it, you mean a drunken lady on the streets of New Orleans during DA Hub, just to be clear.
Yes, thank you.
Listen, I was there to witness the birth of a legend. So it's my job now just to share that story with anyone I meet.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyway, so no, we're talking about how to kind of get through to stakeholders that just don't get it. But before we kind of get into the meat of it, I think, Rusty, it'd be great for our audience just to get a sense of some of your background and, you know, how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting story. It's been 20 years at Vanguard. It's been a long time, but it's never actually felt like the same job at Vanguard. It's a very rotational company, so roughly about every 2 to 3 years, they sort of create a rotation for you. You know, I got lucky early on in my career, and I got involved with Six Sigma and DMAIC when Vanguard started going to operational excellence. That was really my first sort of endeavor with using analytics to improve processes. You know, I rotated around a lot of different operational roles to do startups and turnarounds there, and eventually got into web services, which was developing the websites for Vanguard and applying analytics to web experiences, and eventually running the digital program at Vanguard.
Excellent. Well, Ben, you're perfect, because I think along the way, you've had many opportunities to run into folks who don't necessarily understand the concept of analytics, understand the concepts of digital analytics, report all the reports and the data that might be coming out of them. So what have been some of the things at a high level, and then we can kind of dip into, like, you know, different key topics, but what are some things you've observed? And obviously, Tim and Mo, feel free to jump in as well.
Well, I'm just wondering, does everybody get it now at Vanguard? I mean, you've had enough time.
Yeah.
Like, and if not, what the fuck are you doing? Like,
Hear him, Tim? Every 2 years, they have to start over again. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I wish that were true, but it's still as much a challenge today as it was then. I think as the analytics evolve, the challenge to use them appropriately continues to be there, and you get new folks coming in the pipeline, new leaders, and so it's a constant education and advocacy process for how to apply analytics to problems. So I don't think it's ever done. I mean, I think all of us have been in this for probably 10 years or so, and it's still the first thing that analysts say they get challenged with when you speak them, new or old. So it just seems like it's an eternal problem or challenge for the analyst.
And what do you think really that challenge comes down to? Is it not trusting the person or the data or the process? Like, what, from your perspective, what has been the most difficult, I guess, obstacle?
I think people are aligned or oriented to a specific piece of a puzzle, not the entire. I think we in analytics try to look at a broader contextual data set and put things in a place within that context. And I think organizations are typically aligned where someone is in charge of a piece of that puzzle. Hey, I know when I'm on the other side of that table and I'm responsible for a product or a service or a campaign, I want the analytics to say the efforts that I'm making are resulting in contributions to this company's output, right? So that's my lens on the data. And typically the analyst is, well let's weigh that out against the context of other things that we're doing and how that could fit into the puzzle, right? So I think it's a natural rub from the very beginning of what perspective you have on the analytics just to start out with, right? So is my goal to show success? If you're the business line, yes. If it's the analyst, it's to talk about progress and context and learning. And so it's two different goals, I think. And I think that's where the rub typically comes from, in my opinion.
I like that framing. I just had a little bit of a flashback to a recent episode with a client that sadly, and I think this is probably the case for all of us, I won't speak for you, that it's like, oh, I've been here before. And that's like dealing with a media company, a digital media, and watching that they want to measure sort of through the click, but then you're actually looking at the site analytics and saying, well, there's a 96%, bounce rate, and it's like laughably small, and trying to work with the business and saying, what are we really trying to do with this media campaign? But they've got groups they're working with that are really focused on, oh, what's mm-hmm. our cost per click? How many impressions do we have? And that's like, I mean, that's, we have visited that well many times, and it's a very, very frustrating, but I hadn't really thought about that as being in any organization. They've got kind of their window. There's where it starts and where it ends, and an analyst is often saying yeah, but what happens before and after, and try to kind of frame that whole thing. And that's just kind of a challenge, because in some sense they're saying legitimately, well, I don't control that stuff, I don't care about it, I care about what I control, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, that's just one of the challenges. I think that you also have the other one you see a lot is, I've already made the decision. We've already invested the money. We've already done this thing. And now I need the analytics to show this worked, right? And so, again, from the analyst side, you're looking at it and going, I had other options that I could have spent that money on. I really want to be on the informed side of that decision rather than the just, tell me how the mortar landed in the field and how many people I hit with it. How do you say, well, maybe you should aim before you fire next time. Use my analytics to help guide that. So I think that's the second big challenge. So I think it's one, having a narrow slice of this is the thing that I'm responsible for and I'm working really hard at it. And I want analytics to show that I've got success. And then I've already made the decision. I've already made the investment. Bring the analytics mm-hmm. to the table to show that was the right decision to have made, right? Or the right investment to have made.
So how have you actually, like, that example about the mortar really makes sense to me. How do you, I guess, get those stakeholders that kind of are really involving you right at the tail end, like here's where it fell, et cetera, and bring them along to actually next time, let's use the analytics to figure out where to aim? Like, how have you shifted stakeholders' perspectives from one to the other?
Yeah, so this might be different because I'm inside an organization, right? So I'm married to the outcomes of an entire business, even if we're just talking with one particular stakeholder who only has a piece of it. So to me, that kind of mindset is symptomatic of a broader conversation that isn't happening somewhere in that business line, right? So where is the contextual conversation of all marketing channels rather than this particular marketing channel, right? Where is our scoring of marketing success, right? Where do we have the broader conversation happening? Where do we have the engagement with analytics happening that prevents us from looking at such a myopic piece of data or outcome. So I, at the point you're dealing with it, you can apply some ointment to the one particular stakeholder that you're dealing with. You can try and help them think a little bit more broadly about some other options. But I see that as an opportunity to figure out somewhere else in that business line where a different conversation needs to be created, and how can I get in there and start bringing data to the table that's going to change the conversation, right? That's what I see that as an opportunity to do.
Which you've kind of done, right? If I'm kind of recalling from when I have seen you present, you do have kind of a sort of strong, mature point of view and process that you can use to evangelize to the organization. So if person X is a stakeholder who's not getting it, it seems like you sort of just don't take your eye off the ball of what is the more systemic, broader organizational approach. And is that, I mean, there's what's said on the slides, but then there's what's being said when you're being grilled by tough podcast interviewers. Like, I mean, it seems like that would work, right? So it does seem like countering when somebody's coming at you with a, like, how important is it for you to have sort of a strong organizational why? This is the system and the process. How much does that bolster you against myopia and some of the other challenges?
Right. So it's changed for me, right? In the a few years back when we didn't have a center of excellence or hub and spoke model, you had to do the business level reporting and analytics to support the daily decisions being made in the business. And it was really hard to find the time and the resource to get around the conversation to try and create a more strategic conversation upstream of where you're having these tactical conversations about analytics. That was hard. I think since we've moved to a center of excellence model and we've built that out, we've got spokes in the business line who are serving that daily question, and we can separate ourselves. You know, it's sort of the Google 20%, right? So that 20% either has to be one team who's serving the daily analytics needs, finding 20% of their effort to go end around on that conversation to be more strategic, or you create a center of excellence who's 100% of their time is dedicated to that, but that resource pool is only 20% of the resource pool that you have available working on analytics, if that makes any sense, right?
So how is your hub? So when you say hub and spoke, is that members of your team who are positioned in the departments, or is that members of the departments who are supposed to be working on analytics and their dotted lines into you?
Yeah, so we've helped each business line for us, and business line isn't necessarily division. It might be in a division, you might have an operational group who wants to use digital analytics to optimize, you know, sort of e-commerce and fallout from the web. And then you might have experience groups who wanted to improve the customer experience, optimize some marketing campaigns. So each one of those within a division, we have helped them staff up and build their own analytics teams within that. Then we stitch them all together through a dotted line as a community of practice. And my team sits at the enterprise level supporting that community of practice, making sure they have the right tools to do their job, training, working with them on projects, and then doing that. Hey, they're really weighed down with the daily reporting and ad hoc questions of the department. Where do we think we need to mature the department's, you know, the strategic analytics insight? They're not getting enough value out of analytics because they're asking tactical. How can we help them use the data that's available to them to be more strategic with it, create a broader conversation, create a marketing scorecard rather than a campaign level report, or integrate the data more and have a more multi-channel view of the data, near real-time analytics of their operations, that sort of thing.
So will there be analysts in one of those spokes who say, I'm getting clobbered by stakeholders who don't get it. I only joined this 3 months or 6 months ago. You know, you were part of bringing me in. I don't have the trust and the credibility to shift my group. Hey, Rusty, can you and your team come and kind of have the more kind of be the hammer a little bit? Like, does it work that way? Or
so that's a good question. We play, you know, for us in the Center of Excellence, we sort of have this service model that goes lots and lots of consulting at the top of the funnel. We try to mine opportunities to broaden the conversation in a department or mature a department with a solution. So we'll turn that into a proof of concept for the business line. And then we'll work very, very closely with the business line analysts, if that is successful, to enable them. So we have an enablement phase where we teach the business line analysts to use the solution that we developed. We refine it a little bit more and make it theirs. But through the consulting layer is where we're sort of always attending different meetings, where we're working with the marketing managers or the business operations leaders and sort of trying to guide that conversation up out of the tactical reporting and more to the strategic level. I mean, that's what we're there to do, right? And then when the opportunity presents itself to say, hey, don't you really want to be thinking more strategically and holistically about your marketing efforts? I'm thinking you want to know, when I launch, when I've got a goal of product or service awareness, what is the best channel that I should be launching that in to get that result? It's hard to do if we're analyzing everything at a campaign level. We'll never assemble that insight up to where we can answer questions like that. I'd love to help your team come into a place where it's answering that more strategic question for you, and then work with the team to get them up into that place, right? To give them a solution that they don't have time to develop to move them up into that place. So we've always got one hand in with the leadership and one hand in with the analyst team, sort of supporting both sides of that, really.
I'm just thinking about, I guess, about the analysts in positions that kind of don't have that group, and also that trust that you've built clearly in your organization, where people really listen to you when you're like, okay, here's the strategic direction, here's the bigger picture, how do we take a step back? For those, I guess, less experienced analysts that are really at the coalface, I mean, I'm just thinking about, like, how do you really develop to that point where you're getting hammered with request after request. Like, I still get requests like this, like, give me the click-through rate for this, give me the bounce rate for this, give me the number of users, the number of sessions, and that's the ticket that someone will create and be like, give me that. Yeah. And I have to go back and be like, actually, what are you trying to understand? What is the question we're trying to answer? Like, what kind of techniques have worked for you in, I guess, challenging stakeholders who were really kind of, like, I don't want to say pushy, but like maybe not sure what they're doing quite yet?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a couple techniques to sort of stretch the conversation a little bit broader. I had a great, my former lead analyst, he moved on, he's leading the analyst organization over at Project Management Institute of America. And he had a great way about him. You know, he'd go into a meeting and folks would say, we need to know the bounce rate of this. And Joe would go in there and he'd say, 15,000. He made that number up, totally made it up. And he'd say, where are we going with that? What are we doing with that? What's our next decision off of that? Are we driving? Are we pulling a lever differently because we know that now? And sort of he had a really good way that was sort of getting at, I can go spend a lot of time to get that answer for you, but on the back of a napkin, I just gave you something. Oh, well, that's just good to know. Okay, well, then I saved this a lot of time by not going off and sort of digging into that answer, right? Let's get the data that's going to help us pull the lever differently the next time we do this. And what is that, right? Mm. So he had a really good way of reframing the conversation. I think every analyst has to be part-time consultant. That is part of the responsibility of the job, I think. And as you mature, that becomes a greater part of your job, right? Now, you bring up the trust question. One thing I've learned through my rotations throughout the company, one thing it teaches you is that if you're going to be an influencer within a couple years within that organization, and you might be sitting among people who have been doing that particular job for a long time, if you're going to come in there and understand that, you've got to get really good at learning the business quickly, at listening to the people around you, understanding what their challenges are, what their opportunities are, what's the competition in this space doing? Where are we trying to place ourselves? I think analysts have to do that. If you're going to build the trust of the people around you, you've got to know where they live and understand it and bring that to the table, right? Like, hey, I think you're asking me about bounce rate because we've made a big investment here and whatever. There are other ways of looking. I can give you the bounce rate, but I can also do these other things for you, which might help you make that decision differently next time, right?
Yeah, nice. That's a really great practical example.
Yeah. It's not just asking them to tell you their business objectives. It's you digging in yourself and trying to understand why they're trying to do what they do and bringing some, like, examples. I like that. It's very proactive.
Yeah, I think business acumen is something we talk a lot about with our analysts. Now, it's hard in the center of excellence when you bring somebody in from the outside because you're talking about a lot of different divisions with a lot of different goals and a lot to know. But every analyst has a responsibility in my mind to have business acumen about the business that they're supporting and to understand those things. I just think it's a key part of what they're trying to do.
But I almost flip it, and I'm curious what you guys think. That
I think you're wrong, Tim.
Oh. Okay, well, that's a given, which means that I am right. But and this gets a little bit into the communication, but that I can't remember there. It's kind of almost like a given that people love to talk about themselves. So there's a difference between totally understanding the business and arriving with a knowledge of the business, which can be really, really tough. And that's great, but you can also walk in with just having a business-oriented mindset and a curiosity and saying, I've done enough work to, I think I kind of understand, you know, how selling index funds to the Hispanic market or something, help me understand. And just asking a couple of reasonable and smart questions that aren't, you know, do you want the bounce rate compared to the previous week or the previous month? And I feel like analysts will sometimes, they'll kind of retreat into their domain of expertise, which is the specific metrics, as opposed to saying, no, I really don't really understand where they're coming from. And if I actually ask engaging questions about what are you really trying to do, and I can couch that in terms of, yeah, I know you want me to pull the data for you. I just want to make sure I'm pulling the right and most useful data. So let me ask what, you know, everybody in your department knows cold, but I'm not in your department. I'm in the center of excellence, or I'm external, or I'm however I'm set up. I don't know. I feel like that goes a long way as well, because they realize you're, and sometimes it actually uncovers that maybe they're not really clear on exactly what they're trying to do with, you know, some investment, but that's valuable too. You're not asking in a threatening way.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the experience that we have, we're working with different clients or working with different divisions. So much of the experience we have in analytics really applies to every business line, right? I mean, I may know less about some of our international business lines and what they're trying to accomplish and what the market looks like, but I know from an advertising standpoint, they're trying to drive brand awareness, product awareness, service awareness, and acquisition goals, right? So bringing some of that to the table, asking just a few questions about what does acquisition mean to your business line? Like, how do you know when you've created product success in your business line? But I think that's a lot of years of experience, Tim, that you're talking about as an analyst that allows you to bring that is sort of domain expertise to the table that builds trust pretty quickly, right?
And when you're bringing people, like say you were helping build, create, or grow an analytics expertise in one of those kind of lines of business or in some group that's going to be a spoke, does that include, I mean, are you bringing in sometimes it's a fairly junior analyst and they're really going to have to rely heavily on you guys for some level of kind of mentorship and guidance? Or do you sort of have to go in and say, we've got to bring in, you know, you've got to have somebody who's got a little bit of experience before you bring in a junior person? Like, how do you, it just seems like terrifying that you could have bad analysts, maybe ineffective. I'm learning my language. It's not good and bad. It's effective or ineffective. That you could have, and you could bring in an ineffective analyst, and now they're off potentially steering one of those spokes that they're supporting kind of in a bad direction because maybe they don't have experience, or I don't know. How does that work?
You wish they were all top. I'm proud to say that I think everyone we've put in the seats are good analysts at some level, right? They aren't doing wrong things with data. They may be at different points of maturity in the work that they're doing, but I think they're all good analysts. And we've mixed that from the initial seeding of it came from a prior group of analytics that we had in the organization. So we seeded out with that. We brought in some outside folks, and then we brought in some, you know, internal hires that we felt had the analyst genome that could sort of join that collective group. Now, I say that, but not every department has three or four analysts. Some only have one, right? So you really need to make sure you got the one right. So we've been pretty lucky that way. I think as things grow, we might be a little bit more challenged with that, but I think we've been in the initial startup phases and staffing of this model. I think we were really particular knowing who we put in these seats were going to be really, really critical to the outcome of the entire model. We were pretty particular about who we put there. Now, hey, in some business lines, you're one analyst among, I don't know, maybe 50 marketers, right? So your challenge is still teaching 50 marketers what to do with analytics and how to apply what you're capable of doing to the business problems that they have, right? So some people are better at the consulting side of that than others. And I think where we see that happening, we spend a little bit more time to try and support that group and give them the extra support that they need on that conversation.
So my question is really about how you manage stakeholders. And this seems to be something that comes up a bit. I have a friend in the industry who said the other day that one of her stakeholders basically said data is subjective, and that you can just manipulate it every which way to give you the answer that you want. Have you had any experience working, managing relationships where, for whatever reason, the stakeholder is just like you can get them this answer or that answer, but the truth is it doesn't matter what answer you give them because they're going to push back. They actually question the integrity of the data that you're presenting. And how have you managed that?
Sure. I mean, I think when the data doesn't tell them what they expect, you often get that, right? Mo, I think you talked about an experiment that you ran not too long ago where the results didn't prove anything out. And so the answer was, don't do this, right? So, mm-hmm. And that's not the answer. What do I do with that? I don't quite understand, you know, what I do with an answer like that. I think it's a learning process, right? Data is about a learning process. It doesn't tell you what to do. We're trying to say, we're putting a framework together to tell us what is working and what isn't working. I try to coach people around that and try to get them to understand that it isn't always going to tell you what you want, but we're going to learn something from what we have in front of us, right? And all of this data driving decision-making and powering conversations with customers is really transformational to a lot of business folks. So I think I've been in their seats. I respect what they're trying to do. And I respect that this is a lot of change for them. And just try to coach them and help them through it. It isn't always successful. I'd love to tell you there's some magic bullet that I found that they can, you know, pour a little of this in their drink and suddenly they get it. You know, it doesn't always work out that way. But I think, you know, what's the water in the stone, right? You just got to keep the message going. You just got to keep saying we're gonna learn things. We're gonna use data. We're going to, you know, we're gonna power our next decisions off of data and just keep going with it, right? I just can't let up on. I might have a detractor, but I can't let up on this conversation in a business line, right?
So I have a colleague who has this tactic, which I really admire because this is not something that I would intuitively do. But when I see him do it, I'm like, damn, that is a good idea. And when he has people, well, when he's presenting anything, he actually goes to every single stakeholder before the meeting. He talks them through the results and gets any questions or hesitations out of the way. And then he goes to that meeting where he's presenting his findings and all of the questions he had have now been answered and resolved so that when literally he goes into the meeting, every single person agrees. Is that have you guys tried that? Has it worked for you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe I take that for granted. Yeah. I probably take that for granted, yeah. But we are always meeting with our stakeholders before we put them in front of an audience where the data is going to be read out. Right. So, you know, we do early on consulting on the project. You know, we're trying to teach a very good project management discipline with our analysts, right? So meet with your stakeholder, understand what their business problems are, what they're looking to prove, ask those critical questions, go off and sort of frame out what you think the project's going to look like, the time I share that. And when you come back with your results, you are definitely reviewing that with your stakeholder first and foremost before you bring that into an audience of people. It's going to land much better that way, right? And give them an opportunity to color, you know, the conversation the way that they want to in front of a broader audience, right? So that yeah, maybe I take that for granted, but that's definitely part of our equation.
That is super, super powerful. And the more contentious the stakeholder tends to be, the more you want to work with them one-on-one. But sometimes they ask a question, they question the data, and they're right. And it's much better in my mind to, I've laid an egg in a group when turns out that there was some consideration I didn't know, but I watch analysts who are like, no, we provide the data and the data is right. And that's kind of a bad attitude. So the more surprising of a thing you find, the more that you do want to run it by somebody and say, hey, if we got this, let's partner on this. This looks terrible. And it's going to look like this thing was a disaster. So let's talk about it one-on-one to make sure that we are looking at the data in an appropriate way. There's not some factor. Oh, we were running an A/B test. I ran into this with a client running an A/B test, somehow managed to not have web analytics on the Web Analytics tagging on the B variation. So basically, we didn't even know they were running a test. It was just like half the data. I'm like, well, this sucks. It's like, well, yeah, half of the traffic is lost once it gets to that point. And if we hadn't been kind of collaborating before we were going public with it, then, you know, as an analyst, the analyst, we would have looked bad. So I don't know. I think there's like, there are lots of benefits. It's just, it's painful because we're like, oh, that takes time and they're going to question our stuff. We're going to have to go back and recheck our data. It's like, yeah, but you're actually going to get a good result at the end of the day if you do that.
Yeah. So I mentioned, you know, earlier, I sort of consider these really tactical questions when we were talking about folks that bring really tactical questions to the table, like bounce rate. I sort of view those as a sales lead to a broader conversation with probably that person's manager or the audience of their person's peers. When we get there and we come to the table and we've got a solution that creates a broader conversation, part of our enablement process is actually teaching leaders how to engage with data and how to interact with it and how to interrogate it and ask the right questions. And so we'll literally put glass jars in front of us at the table when we come with monthly data about a broad, here's what happened in your site with your marketing efforts this month. Let's look at this data. And those jars will be labeled things like things we'd like to know, but we don't know because we didn't tag things properly. And we'll go, oh, that sounds like an action item. We can write that down. And we write that and we put that in the things to tag jar.
And that's then, amazing.
Oh my God.
And sometimes there's, I don't trust the data, or I don't think we're measuring this properly, or I don't like that metric. And we go, that's a really good question. We'll take that offline. We write that down and we go, here's the jar for, let's do more research if this is the right data point or whatever. Channeling it, what ends up happening at the end of that is you've got these jars with pieces of paper in them. That's a visual manifestation of good, positive action coming out of interacting with data. And then regardless of it, if you want to interrogate it, you don't want to believe this metric, that's fine. This is how you positively channel that and still move on engaging with the data, and don't, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, I don't engage with data. You know, this is how you channel it
right
in a positive way.
And Tim would like to know if there's also a swear jar there. No, I'm just kidding.
So this is actually really good timing, because just before the break, and yes, in Australia, we get quite a lengthy Christmas break, which is really nice. I was meeting with some stakeholders and they, like, basically I've moved teams and they gave me a laundry list of like things that we want to know. And it was literally like percentage of customers that do this, percentage of customers that pay with this card. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, what are we going to do with this? Like, if we know that it's 60% pay with this payment method and 40% pay with that, well, like, what are we going to do with this information? And it legit comes back to me like, oh, we just want to know. Like, what do you guys do? Like, and so, I mean, for me, what I tend to say is,
I believe that is a sales lead to a deeper conversation with leadership. That's what I just heard.
That's correct. You know what, Jake, if you guys ever saw the show Lost, I use this analogy all the time, right? So plane crash, right? Island, people always trying to attack you, smoke monsters. There's always a fire to be put out every day, right? So 80% of the people are going to focus on surviving the day. But somebody's got to be thinking about how we get off of this island, right? And I think, I don't know that you can stop the tidal wave of those kind of questions that are going to come to you, but you've got to spend time working on changing the conversation. I think that's where you just have to find, even if you're not a center of excellence model, you're one team, you've got to find the 20% time to get upstream of that and change that conversation, or else you'll just be stuck on the island surviving every day.
I totally agree with that. The only question is, and I spend a lot of time talking to women in our industry about developing trust with your stakeholders. And it's something, I don't know why, but what I can tell you is that women do seem to struggle with developing that trust. And I don't know if that experience is different to guys in the industry, but I know that it's something that's really important to a lot of women that I talk with. Is it worth ever sometimes doing some of those things that take you 5 seconds to do? Like, is it worth doing some of those tasks in order to develop that trust? Or is it more, I should try and reframe this conversation if you don't have that trust, then the reframe can seem as pushback, right?
I mean, to me, it's this progression with, if you just start saying no, 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 like it, as you said, in I think regardless of gender, if you're saying yeah, you're asking for X, and in your head you're saying that's there's no value. Like you can probe a little bit. Like what are you gonna do with that? Or what if it? I like the example of saying let's just for shits and giggles, let's say that it's 60,000. What would you do? I mean, you can come at that, but I don't think you can go very far. Like you've got to do quick little hits and then say, you're right, I can pull that for you easily. Let me establish that good relationship. And I do think it is you're walking a bit of it's a balancing act, because if you continually do that, then you just kind of become their bitch, I guess would be the phrase that's popping to mind. And you've kind of trained them that they can just tell you, give me this, give me this, give me this. So to me, that is like part of the art of being an effective analyst, is not looking like you're stonewalling and holding the data hostage, but also gently trying to guide them. And if you can actually say, oh, here's your number, it's 60,000, but also it seemed like you were really curious about this, so I also did this other thing that you didn't ask for. You know, I drew a picture. I just drew a diagram to show how this fall off is happening. Something they didn't ask for, but you sort of detected, and it does take more time. But that's when all of a sudden they're like, oh, and then all of a sudden they spend all their time talking about this thing they didn't ask for directly, and you're kind of off to the races. So inappropriate language aside, I think that's key.
I do wonder if the person that's bringing those questions is the right person to spend that additional time with too, though, right? So I don't know the organization. I don't know the people in that organization, but there's some folks that I would say we can sort of get this person their tactical answer and get this piece of it over with, and view the fact that they're asking these kinds of questions as an opportunity to talk to that person's boss about a more value-added conversation that we could create for them. I don't know. I think that's probably really proprietary to every business and who you're dealing with and what the you know, what the politics of that organization are, but it's a math equation between, this is definitely a sales lead to a broader conversation, but is it this person that I'm going to have that conversation with, or just get this pain over with as quickly as possible and go upstream and offer the additional services to a different person upstream of that person?
But what happens if the person, it's not the right person, but all they'll tell you is that the person upstream, that's what they want. That actually, you just set off another one like, oh, yeah, no, my manager just wants it. Like, yeah, but what are we really trying to do? And like, No. Person two or three levels up, they just want to know this metric. It's like, well, can we talk with them? Like, no, that's just what they want. How do you guys, A, I guess, do you guys run into that? B, do you have any good strategies for addressing that?
Yeah, maybe I'm lucky in my organization. There's sort of a very open door policy to any level of any department. So that's simply just sending an email going, hey, you know, chief marketing officer, would love to sit down with you, get 15 minutes, run some ideas past you. And that's a perfectly acceptable practice. I imagine it's not that way at every organization, right? So maybe I'm just lucky that way. But
I will say in my perspective, the CMOs and the directors, they're actually totally open to it. It's just they wind up with people who are two or three levels down, who they don't quite get that. So like, it's weird, like the barrier isn't that like you'll get in trouble and walking into that person from that person. They think it's awesome. It's the people who are two levels down who are like, whatever, they're terrified. The person, the executive asked some casual question and the person just took it, decided to behave as an order taker and ran, and they just wanted to get it off of their plate and onto the analysts. Whereas the person would have loved for somebody to actually come back and ask a smart question. So I do try to remind myself and analysts that often. But
so would you, I mean, if you didn't have that policy, like I'm pretty lucky I have that kind of policy too, where I could go to anyone in the C-band and say, hey, I heard you have this question. I just want to talk through a little bit of the details around it. Like 100%, that wouldn't be a problem. But if you were in a company that wasn't like that, like what do you reckon, it's still worth going back to that person, you know, two or three levels above and being like, hey, I heard you have this question? Or like, would you be worried about fracturing that relationship with the person who asked for it?
Sometimes I think you got to give the person what they ask for, just as a way to keep continuity, to get that next opportunity to build the relationship and the trust.
But you can ask the deeper question.
You can.
You can put your you can return your glass jar with it, right? You can actually say, here's the question you asked, and oh, by the way, slide two says, or the footnote says, really not clear if this is the bigger priority or that's the bigger priority. I've definitely been subversive in my deliverables in those situations.
And if it doesn't clear up over time, then that's a signal that the organization's maybe not going to long-term be the right thing.
And searchdiscovery.com/...
I don't even have to do it anymore.
There's our guest. We didn't let our guest answer. I don't know, Rusty.
I know. Rusty.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think you'd be hard. There's decision makers, and then there's sort of the working level, right? And at some point, the conversation you really want to be having about a broader analytics application, I find it hard to believe showing up in that person's office and saying, you know, maybe not a very specific scenario, but after a series of those scenarios have played out where I've been asked very tactical questions, to have a lunch with someone a little bit further upstream and go, look, you know, I love the team. I love being a part of this. I love serving the business with data. I feel like I'm being underutilized. I actually think there's a more strategic conversation we could be having around these analytics. How can I help us create that? How can I help you and your organization get up from where we are to a more strategic conversation? Because I feel like the potential's there. If I can't imagine anybody not wanting to have that conversation, right?
I 1,000% agree, but I'm also realizing that that means, because I've watched people say, no, we just want to keep elevating the conversation, and they're not really prepared to go and really dig in and execute. So as soon as you are raising the stakes, when you say, I want to elevate the conversation, you have inherently committed to delivering something of value on that. And that means it may be much harder data to get. It may mean you're really having to work really hard to deliver it, because that is a killer. If you're like, I'm not going to be able to provide your totally tactical, simple thing because I want to push and elevate the conversation. And then once you open that door and say, I'm elevating the conversation, you are committing that you can participate in that conversation on an ongoing basis. And so you damn well better be actually delivering. Yep. And you have to. Like, that should be scary and exciting. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, I think, shy away from taking that, making that
lesson,
step.
Lesson 361 of my career, right, is being too much of a visionary and talking about what's possible instead of what we can do, right? So you get this reputation of deliver it, right? So now what I do is I really work on creating at least a working model or a plan of how to achieve that and bringing that to the table as well. So I'll if I can't literally pull it up and show them or bring some kind of data to the table and go, look, here's just a little piece of what's possible here. Imagine if we scaled this up. I bring something with me. I've got to bring a tangible piece of it and keep it a little bit closer to practical for them, right?
That's great. Okay, so I want to turn this just a little bit, but I'm interested in your opinion. And I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer, but as we've been discussing, you know, there's a number of really cool little key things. So, you know, turning the conversation a certain way to kind of the leverage you could pull as a business, you know, how to model things. Kind of you gave the example of one of the analysts you had who kind of was really great at just sort of turning the question. So there's sort of emerging to me sort of these two sides of this, which is one is sort of a process and structure side, sort of like how we align to the business, how we approach the business as a unit. And then there's sort of the individual side of how I interact with a set of stakeholders and the way that I kind of deflect, change, ideate around their challenges and problems. What is the most important? Let's say a VP who's going to try to build an organization is listening. Is the structure and the process part more important, or is the individual talents of the team more important, or is it something that's somewhere in the middle? So I'm really just I'm curious what you think.
Both, but I think there's an order, if that makes any sense, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. No, that's good.
I think you won't get there if you don't have both sides of that equation, but I think the faster way to the answer is helping an executive get what they need at the table at a very high level, and then driving down through the organization the analytics that are going to, you know, so like help them get a baseline of how well their marketing is performing. Like, go after that problem, right? Because money is following that problem, right? Their investment, their major decisions they're having to make year over year, there's not a chief marketing officer in a company that isn't having to do more with less every year, right? So analytics can help them spend that money more wisely and get good results. So getting to that person and helping with that problem, if you can do that and then drive that down, will put the priority in the right place. And then you've got to help the team sort of mature around being able to answer those questions. I think that's where I've seen it work best, right? And I've seen a lot of bottom up, and I see it stall at a certain level, right? Like you can get good ground level, but the numbers are not in their favor, right? It's never going to achieve what it can achieve if the top isn't on board with that and driving it through the organization.
Okay. No, I think that's a really good point, and that's a tough one. That's tough for people.
What happens where you have stakeholders that are really data savvy? They believe in using data to make decisions. They're totally across the process, everything. So what ends up coming out is that every time they ask you for something, they give you the context. They give you, like, here's the decision that I'm making with it. But then it's also like, this is exactly how I want you to do this analysis. And then can you visualize it this way and use these data sources? Like, I imagine this is something that you've encountered, you know, in your career. Like, what do you just do exactly what they say? Or like, how have you managed that if it's someone who really does believe in the process but is also highly educated about data?
I think we have people who are really, really savvy about data, but I don't think we have people who are savvy about digital data. So I've never had a person that's come with such a strong opinion. They might have framed the problem very specifically and said, I need data that does this, but I've never had them actually go to the extent of telling me how to perform the analysis or, you know, how they want to visualize the results of that. I've never actually come across that. So I don't have a good answer for you there, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe sort of keep your enemies close, right? And keep your friends close and your enemies closer, right? So that's somebody who can be, in some ways, they're a good client because they're really passionate about data. In some ways, they're going to be the most challenging client you've ever dealt with, right? And so I'm going to want to collaborate with them. I'm going to want to figure out how to shape them a little bit and partner with them. So that's what I'm going to look for there.
I feel like when somebody says, I'm all about the data, I love the data, that's like this is going to be, they want to be, and they might not have learned that there's value and power in the brainstorming and the collaboration to try to work together. And I do think they're, to me, that is just like, okay, yeah, strap on your patient boots. Because a lot of times they'll say, I'm totally bought into the process, but the process they're bought into is their process, which is the process they learned at the previous organization that was a media agency and therefore was a complete disaster. So that's all I can do is say, be patient and try to figure out how not to piss them off. Or if they go too nuts, it's like, well, I'll send you a login. Like, if sounds like you know exactly what you want, you should have an email in your inbox with the login. If you'd like me to review your results before you present it, I'm happy to do so. I haven't actually done that, but
that's right. Here's a length of rope. Good luck out there. All right. Well, Tim, listen, I know, Tim, you've got lots more questions, but unfortunately, we've got to head to a last call. It's great. This is a really good conversation and actually surprisingly – well, not surprisingly, I'm very impressed by the level of depth that you are covering it, Rusty, and that's, I've got a lot of really awesome notes that I'm kind of excited to kind of think through. So one of the things we like to do on the show is called The Last Call. We just go around the horn and talk about anything that we think is interesting and might be interesting to our audience. So Rusty, you're our guest. Do you have a last call?
I do. Can I have two? Is that okay? Is that acceptable?
Wow, you get bonus
points.
All right,
yeah.
bonus last call. Of course you can. Go for it.
Okay,
that's okay. Michael, yeah, and I will exactly have the same one, so you'll make up for it.
I mean, technically, you are the king of the DAA, so
that's right.
You can have one for the salt and one for the pepper. There you go.
All right. Well, I think. About a decade ago, I remember working with Jerry McGovern. I don't know if you guys know Jerry McGovern or not, but he was really big on customer care words. and framing your user experience around customer care words. I find myself coming back to Jerry McGovern's blog again as we think more about journeys. I think he's really talking a lot about marrying user experience, analytic data, customer care words, content strategy, and voice of customer together to really drive out a better customer journey. I think he's always been passionate about that, but he's sort of added those other disciplines in, and I find myself peering over the journey analytics edge going, this is a lot of what we're going to have to do. So I find myself reading his blog a lot more these days.
So literally, like, what's a customer care word?
Yeah. So Jerry, you know, when we first brought him in at Vanguard years ago, his thing was he worked with an airline company that was offering really cheap flights, but they were using on their website discounted airfare. And they were practically giving the seats away, but no one was taking them up on the offer. So Jerry went out and really found that he did a study with their customer base about what their brand stood for and what, you know, what words resonated for them. And it turned out cheap airfare was the way they thought about that. So the content strategy of the site didn't align with the way the users thought about the process. And so it was about optimizing to the words that are in your customer's head about your brand and how to think about various actions. So, but he's expanded that more into a more journey-based, analytics-driven sort of approach. So again, I find myself reading his blog a lot more again these days. And I guess the second one, and Michael, I know you're always talking about sort of developing analysts, right? And you're pretty passionate about that. We've talked about that a lot. There's a concept out there called the Fermi principle. It's sort of a scientific thing that I use with my analysts. I love this. It's really about how you use a limited data set to do back of the napkin math to sort of estimate what an outcome could be or would be. To me, it's all about how a scientist or how an analyst thinks about how they would tackle a problem, an analytic problem, and it really getting people thinking about that. So one of the famous applications of that is, how do we know we are the only, are we the only beings in the universe, right? And so there's a limited data set. You only have the data set that's available to you from your perspective. How do you tackle that problem? And so it really helps me work with the analyst to develop that next level thinking about how you assemble analytics to answer really, really difficult questions in ways that there isn't a perfect data set to do that, right? So how do you approach that?
So I don't know if Michael can remember, but we had a guest who had it was around the Fermi. Who was it though?
Was it Dennis Mortensen?
I was thinking Dennis Mortensen.
Maybe the Fermi paradox. Yeah.
It was the Fermi paradox, but it was a post that was kind of coming at it from both the so insignificant and how do you, there was another label that was, it was on top of the Fermi paradox.
That's right.
I will track it down.
That sounds really interesting though. I'm keen to have a read.
It's funny, actually, my last public presentation of 2017, I actually had a back of the napkin thing. I need to start. Mm. It would sound smarter if I referred to it as, you know, applying.
Exactly. I'm not just making this up. I'm applying the Fermi principle here, folks.
I have a picture of a napkin. That just doesn't seem as classy as
Dan
perhaps.
Back, I'm about to do data science. That's right. All right. Hey, Mo, what's your last call?
Oh, well, it's hard to follow that up. So today I just have a little tip. It's nothing super significant, but I have been using Tableau for a while where I use, there's like a color picker tool, and I use that to pick the colors in a logo. And someone recently from Data Runs True introduced me to a tool called Pictaculous, which tells you the colors of logos, which, as we all know, I really get into my colors and, you know, making sure the graphs are like meet brand guidelines. So if you haven't checked it out, Pictaculous is a really cool tool.
Nice.
Excellent. Michael, you want to go?
Well, yeah, I'll go first because I am very nervous that Tim will have stolen mine again. So it is actually in the data science realm. Recently, I ran across an author and speaker and a guy who does a lot of work in machine learning and AI named Joel Gruss. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, G-R-U-S. Anyways, he has a blog, joelgruss.com, and he has this hilarious article where he sort of goes through as if he was creating a FizzBuzz interview situation, but he uses TensorFlow to do it. So anyways, if you like data science stuff and AI, that's a fun little read. And his book actually is, he's got some books, so check it out. Anyways, so that's my last call. It's more, it's fun.
So it was the Wait But Why post on the Fermi Paradox was what Dennis referred to, which was a little mind-blowing. And kind of separate, I mean, that was more like a blow-your-mind Fermi Paradox. I feel like maybe I need to go read a biography of Fermi to smart dude. So, okay, I'm going to sneak in a twofer. So one, it's the beginning of the year. You're figuring out where you're going. I've not actually plugged it on the podcast, but womeninanalytics.org, the Women in Analytics Conference in Columbus is on March 15th, 2018. There is a, if you're a student, there are ways to apply to try to get a free, come to it for free. It is only Women in Analytics. It is an analytics conference. All the speakers and presenters are going to be women. It is open to both genders for attending. There's a data visualization competition that's open to both genders. That's like $1,000 prize. So check it out. Columbus in March can be awesome. Can also be a little cold and rainy. So it might be awesome. Hard to say. The other just kind of random fun little tool, if you are heading into the year, you've got a budget, you've got a job description. I saw this tool that is textio.com, T-E-X-T-I-O.com. And it is allegedly machine learning behind under the hood, but you paste in a job description and it basically highlights kind of, it'll highlight, oh, you know what? This word actually sort of skews feminine. So, you know, think about that. Or this is passive, or you're using this same phrase 17 times. That's maybe overuse. I saw a guy present and showed it and it just was very, very cool. You paste in your job description and almost, because nobody, as he made the point, nobody likes to write job descriptions and they all suck and they all sound the same. And many of them are very, very ineffective. So check that out with the next job description you have. And I bet you will feel like you have a much richer job description after using it.
Nice. Yeah. As someone who frequently writes job descriptions, I'm all over that one. All right. Well, listen, you've probably been sitting there thinking, how do I engage with these people? Especially this rusty character seems so intelligent. And I tell you, there's a way. There is a way. And it's through our Facebook page and Measure Slack and on Twitter. Rusty, do you use Twitter?
I do not.
Are you on the
I do not use the Twitter. Oh,
he does not use the Twitter. Well, good for you. It's going away. It's 2018 is the year of Twitter just crashing and burning.
I was ahead of the curve.
Don't worry.
We'll just post his cell phone number on the show notes, and you can just text him directly.
Throw a text over there. No, but we would love to hear from you. And actually, I want to talk to the people right now, just right out there in radio land. We do this thing where we need you to go review our show on iTunes. I know that sounds pretty self-serving, but it is something that we're trying to do a better job of. So if you are listening in the car, just call and leave yourself a voicemail after this to say, hey, once I get to my desk, log into iTunes, leave a show review for the Digital Analytics Power Hour, and we would very much appreciate it. All right.
Jim Stern, you're excused because you've already done
that's
it.
That's right.
Andrew Richardson, you're excused because you've already done it. Thank you.
Jim Stern is the person who recommended Rusty as a guest. So that's a big shout out to Jim as well for that. You can come see us in person, and there's two places you can do that this year. One is at Super Week in February, and the other sounds like it's going to be in, is it June? At Marketing Analytics World. And that's pretty exciting.
Marketing Evolution.
Marketing World. Evolution World. I don't even know the name of it. That's how exciting it is. Anyways, we'll be doing some live shows this year, so we're excited for that. All right. Well, Rusty, thank you so much for coming on the show. For my co-hosts, Mo and Tim, for all of you out there, keep analyzing.
For listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at analyticshour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
What you drinking, Helbs?
Just some whiskey from my desk drawer. Tim, how much is that rig that we could get from NPR?
That's only about $3,000 to $4,000 a piece, so we don't need to get
worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really addressing Michael. I'm pretending I'm telling you that, but Michael's like, "Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, that was fucked up. Let me try that again." Okay. So then,
even
like,
your skills, Tim. I don't know how to deal with stakeholders who don't get it. I give up and go home. Oh, that's what I was.
I'll take that.
That's what I should have said.
That's good. Stroke Tim's ego.
Rusty is the king of analytics in the United States.
Other than being a few time zones away in the wrong cuisine, it was completely spot on.
You were a little dusty there, Tim.
And Tim is shaking his head furiously.
Great job, Tim. All right.
You summarized it so well. No one needs to say anything. You just nailed it. And feel free, Tim and Michael, to jump in if you want.
Oh, Tim will jump in, all right.
So if you don't review the show, you're insulting both Jim Stern and Rusty.
Nothing like an insult to finish the show.
Oh man, my VoIP connection to Rusty.
Yeah, we lost Rusty like about 30 seconds before, and I was like, oh,
I was like
praying
that you'd notice though, so that you wouldn't be like, and thanks, Rusty.
Yeah.
Silence.
Rock flag and clueless stakeholders.